A landmark letter from Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to the United States President George Bush is doing little to ease tension between the two countries. The document, delivered to the White House on Monday, is the first formal communication from an Iranian president to an American president since diplomatic relations collapsed amid the hostage crisis in 1979. U.S. officials say they're disappointed that the letter failed to address the developing crisis over Iran's nuclear ambitions. If you have questions about what the letter says, what it means, and how it might affect relations, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And joining us now here in Studio 3A is Carla Ann Robbins, Chief Diplomatic Correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
First of all, you got a copy of this letter last night ahead of most of the media. Who translated it from Farsi? Were two editions delivered to the White House, one in English and one in Farsi?
That's what we understand, is that there was a translation that came along with it. And I think that's the version that I myself got. But you know what it's like in this business when something gets leaked to you. You go out of your way to make sure it's the real thing, but you don't get a lot of detail about the mechanics behind it.
And is there any doubt at this point that it was written by the Iranian president, intended for delivery to the White House?
I don't think there's any doubt about it, because if you recall, yesterday, the very existence of it was announced by the Iranian government, not by the U.S. government.
It begins, His Excellency, Mr. George Bush, President of the United States of America, and then goes on, for some time now, I've been thinking how one can justify the undeniable contradictions that exist in the international arena. The letter goes on, I'm asking you to characterize it, if you would. I mean, to some degree, its tone seems to be more in sorrow than in anger.
Although there are some pretty angry-making allegations inside it itself, I think the striking thing about it is that when the Iranians announced yesterday morning their time that the president had written to the president of the United States, they suggested that he was going to come up with some proposals for solving the problems of the world. And there were great expectations that the Iranians were going to come up with another potential compromise for the nuclear standoff. Instead, there was almost no mention. The word nuclear barely comes up in it, and the reference to their own nuclear program is just one of saying, how come whenever anybody in the Middle East makes technological progress, does everyone think it's a threat to, quote-unquote, the Zionist regime? There's really no attempt here to even try to find a way out of the nuclear stalemate. What this is a list of allegations against the United States and a call, repeated call to George Bush to follow the role of the prophets, to follow what Jesus Christ preaches, to follow what Moses preaches, to basically get in touch with his inner religious soul and to improve American behavior.
Can one be a follower of Jesus Christ? And then there's PBUH and anybody.
Praise be unto him.
And this is quite familiar to anybody who's read any Islamic documents. It normally follows any mention of the prophet. The great messenger of God, feel obligated to respect human rights, present liberalism as a civilization model, announce one's opposition to the proliferation of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction, make war on terror his slogan, and finally work toward the establishment of a unified international community, a community which Christ and the virtuous of the earth will one day govern, but at the same time, and then goes on to list this long measure of grievances. And he portrays himself at one point as, you might know that I'm a teacher and my students ask me. And then he proceeds to ask the president a series of essentially rhetorical questions.
Well, you know, it's intriguing because it's both Socratic in the style of asking questions, but it's also very religious in the style. For anybody who has read, you know, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Talmud, you know, things of that sort, to put it in the Judeo terms. You know, the rabbis asked these questions. You know, this is very common in monotheistic religions, I suppose. I'm not a religious expert. I'm an expert, actually, on proliferation or non-nuclear weapons, but I am trained religiously, as we all are, many of us in the United States. And this is very familiar to me in the language. At the same time, there are all sorts of allegations of things that the United States has done, including the suggestion that somehow that the U.S. intelligence services were far too good to have allowed September 11th to happen, and perhaps they were infiltrated or some way complicit in this, and suggests at one point, I think he says something like, well, I'm just asking this question.
This is just a guess.
This is just an educated guess, I think, is the term, as I recall, the term he uses, and it is 18 pages. But, you know, there are allegations that the U.S. is supporting coups in Latin America, very much the Hugo Chavez relationship between Iran and Venezuela. Why is the United States basically allowing Africans to get ripped off? Why is the U.S., he supports the overthrow of the murderous Saddam Hussein, but then condemns the war again and again again and says, why are you wasting so much money when you could be solving the problems of the world? He talks about the psychological effects on American soldiers in Iraq. It is a very, you know, there are a lot of things in it that are incredible attacks on the United States, or perhaps some people would say, you know, incredible attacks on the United States. And at other times, there is that sort of more in sorrow than an anger tone to it.
Mm-hmm. Let's put this in a little bit of context. At the moment, the United States or the other members of the permanent five Security Council members, those are the people with veto power there, and Germany, one more, are meeting to figure out an approach to Iran and dealing with it through the Security Council in terms of its nuclear ambitions. In fact, an announcement earlier today that a proposal is going to be drawn up that contains both carrots and sticks. This is what you get if you go along with what we want. These are the kinds of punishments you might face if you refuse to go along, yet to be clear that they've gotten the support of Russia and China on this.
Well, what's intriguing about this is, and I think the expectation once again yesterday was, the Iranians have a very long history for when they get to the very brink of international censure that they make a new offer of compromise. And they've done this again and again over the last 2.5-3 years, and it really hasn't slowed down their nuclear progress at all, but they've been very good at basically keeping people off balance. The expectation yesterday that because Secretary Rice was meeting with the P5 plus one, meaning the permanent five of the Security Council plus the Germans, that this was going to be a new offer and that it was going to basically give the Russians and the Chinese yet one more excuse for why they did not want a toughly worded resolution. The debate right now, or the discussion right now about the Security Council, is whether or not it's going to be a Chapter 7 resolution. You may recall that from the Iraq, the run-up to the Iraq war itself. Chapter 7 makes this all mandatory, and it would say to the Iranians, you've got to cease and desist your production of enriched uranium, potentially usable for nuclear fuel or a nuclear weapon. Chapter 7 means it's international law. You got to obey. And the Americans and the Europeans are saying this is the point we've gotten to. The Russians and Chinese are worried about it because it also opens the door potentially to what happens if they don't comply. And even though the Americans and the Europeans keep saying, we're not going to mention sanctions this time around, everybody knows that Chapter 7 potentially opens the door to sanctions or even to military action. So that's the big concern. The intriguing thing about this letter is that this doesn't seem to change this debate at all. I mean, I thought that they were writing a letter before I saw the letter as a way to give the Russians and the Chinese yet another reason to say the Iranians were ready to compromise and let's not push forward with the Chapter 7 resolution. This has almost nothing to do with it.
The only direct reference that I could see to the UN, in fact, was, quote, the people of the world have no faith in international organizations because their rights are not advocated by these organizations.
Intriguingly, there are a lot of people in the Bush administration who feel that way, too.
It then goes on to say, liberalism and Western-style democracy have not been able to help realize the ideals of humanity. Today, these two concepts have failed. Those with insight can already hear the sounds of the shattering and the fall of the ideology and thoughts of the liberal democratic systems. We increasingly see that the people around the world are flocking toward a main focal point, that is, the Almighty God. Undoubtedly, through faith in God and the teachings of the prophets, the people will conquer their problems. My question for you is this. Do you not want to join them?
Well, it's basically the tone all along. We're calling you to follow the prophets. You know, please, you know, be a good Christian and repair your ways. That is basically the call. Now, did he really expect George Bush to listen to him and to follow it? Or was he talking to his base? I mean, I don't think this is going to have much of an effect with the Russians and the Chinese. But a lot of the criticisms, once again, are criticisms that a lot of people in the quote-unquote third world would share at this point. And they may be actually, you know, Ahmadinejad right now is on his way to Indonesia or has just arrived there. They're playing to certainly a group of people. I don't think this one plays in Washington, though.
And indeed, there are questions about exactly what audiences was addressed to. And some of the questions, of course, would be asked by Americans as well to the president. But nevertheless, most of Iran's newspapers, this according to a story in the Associated Press, devoted their front pages to Ahmadinejad's message on Tuesday, with the moderate daily Sharg, or East, saying the message may open a new page in relations with the United States. But a conservative lawmaker lambasted the president for failing to consult Parliament before he sent the letter. So is that an indication, do you think, that this was an attempt to play to the president's base in Iran?
Well, see, that's what's such a puzzle about it, because the Iranian officials yesterday, before we got a copy of the letter, went out of their way to raise the expectation that this was actually Iran opening a door for negotiation with the United States. And there's nothing to negotiate over in this letter. That's what's so incredibly puzzling about this. Ahmadinejad himself does not have a great relationship with his own parliament. He's got a very stormy relationship inside the ruling elite as well in Iran. So who knows what's going on in there on internal politics. But what is puzzling is Why did he feel that it was necessary to write this letter? Is he so out of touch with the West that he thought it would actually play in Washington itself, mm-hmm. or in Europe, which is obviously a place that they're very concerned about? You know, what they could have done, and I think the Bush administration has considerable vulnerability on this question of, you know, all options are on the table except for talking to Iran itself. So the expectation yesterday when they sent this out was that perhaps the Iranians were opening the door for some direct dialogue, which was then going to embarrass the Bush administration into having to explain why they're not willing to talk to the Iranians if this is that important. This letter doesn't do it. At least I found the Bush administration has found it remarkably easy to dismiss it. And you can see it when you read the letter.
Yeah, and whether you agree with the Iranian president or not, it's hard to see this as anything other than a poke in the eye of the president of the United States.
Yes, and to the people of the United States, too, when he talks about September 11th.
We're talking with Carla Ann Robbins, Wall Street Journal chief diplomatic correspondent, about the letter from the Iranian president to the American president. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some of your calls on what this means and where it may lead, if anywhere. We'll start with Graham. Graham's calling from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I had a question about if the letter said anything about what Iran was planning to do if the U.S. kept up its opposition to their nuclear program.
Well, Carla Ann Robbins, I didn't see any direct reference to that at all.
That's what's so intriguing about this. It doesn't say it, and the Iranians have sent very mixed messages. I mean, they've been threatening that they were going to pull out of the nonproliferation treaty, and then they went out of their way today to say they weren't going to pull out of the nonproliferation treaty if the Security Council dealt with this. So, you know, sort of every day a different explanation from the Iranians, but intriguingly there isn't one inside this letter about what they're planning on doing.
Graham?
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's try to talk to Steve. Steve's with us from Port Crane in New York.
Hi, thanks for letting me get through.
Sure.
I just have a question. President Bush is saying that he wants to try the diplomatic approach first. And this is unique in history. The President of Iran is reaching out to our president diplomatically. And it just seems to me that once President Bush gets on a path, he's not going to veer from it. He's not going to let the facts veer him from his path, what he wants to do. And from what you two people have been talking about, what's in that letter, I gotta say that the Iranian president's like right 100%. From what I've heard,
in terms of which policy do you think?
Well, just about everything but 9/11. What he said that a lot of organizations don't represent the people of the world, like the IMF and all that. I mean, mm-hmm. they represent a lot of the multinational corporations in the world, but not all the real true people of the world.
He, of course, has been quoted several times as saying that the state of Israel should no longer exist. And this letter, not quite as strident as some of those remarks, but it goes on in some of those in that character as well, basically where he says, my students and I have looked at all the globes and the maps and the history books, and we find no place called Israel, and this is a terrible thing and should be eliminated.
Well, see, I have a way, like, I go by what people do, not mm-hmm. so much what they say. Like, when they talk about the Iranian president threatening Israel and Hamas threatening Israel, Israel says they're for peace and they're not for peace. They're for committing ethnic cleansing on a whole group of people. That's what Israel actually does. And apparently the Palestinians and the Muslims over there, they're going by what Israel actually does, mm-hmm. not by what they say.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get Bill on the line. This is Bill calling from Nolan Springs in Arizona.
Yes, sir. I don't think there's anything puzzling about the Ahmadinejad letter at all. They've been listening to what's been going on among the five permanent security members of the United Nations, and they know that China, among others, has called for the United States to open up its own bilateral contacts with Iran. They have therefore taken the first step by issuing a letter to the United States. And while it doesn't say anything concrete as far as they're concerned, they've opened the channel of communications. If the United States doesn't want to take advantage of it, they can go to everybody else and say, see, I told you so. I think that letter is 1,000% effective everywhere but in the Bush administration, but then they don't have too much contact with the reality anyway.
What do you think about that, Carla Ann Robbins? Are the Chinese, the Russians, any members of the permanent of the Security Council going to read this letter and say this is something we need to follow up on?
So far, I don't think that's happened. I mean, I think there are a lot of letters that could have been written out of Tehran that would have increased the pressure on the United States, not just from Russia. Russia and China, but also from the Europeans, who have been calling once again for a lot more carrots as well as threatened sticks. I think this letter is so out of the context of normal diplomatic dialogue in the West that I don't think it puts an enormous amount of pressure on the Bush administration. I think that demand is there, the implicit demand, but I don't think this letter is the one that really puts them into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
I think your lady hits the point on the head. In the West, Iran is in the East, as are most of its friends.
Yep. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. And Mr. Ahmadinejad, of course, has his own political problems back home and trying to figure out what's going on. Well, we have a hard time with American politics, much less Iranian politics a lot of the time. But would this seem to bolster his position back home?
You know, I'm not an expert on Iranian politics at all. I would say that what you've seen already is the criticism from some hardliners in the parliament saying, you know, how dare you even reach out to the United States? We don't care about the content of it either. He's had, as I said, very rocky relationships with his own parliament in the past. It's very, very hard to tell. He certainly is using the nuclear program itself to bolster himself politically. I don't know if you remember, but when they announced a few weeks ago that they had begun successfully enriching uranium, they had this enormous roadshow which went out there, and they had dancers and people in traditional Iranian costumes who were carrying, you know, little vials of what was supposedly enriched uranium in it. I mean, this nuclear program has become a very emotional issue, and one he's used to bolster himself.
Carla Ann Robbins is the Wall Street Journal's chief diplomatic correspondent. She joined us here today in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Neil Cohn, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.